Amen. Thank you so much, Brian, for the reading, and Camilla, too. Bell Choir, it was great to have you back today. Sounded wonderful, and I love that we got to hear what a friend we have in Jesus, getting that melody and those harmonies coming through, and hopefully we can have some ways of thinking about Jesus as a friend today as well. So today we'll be continuing in our God in the Everyday for Everyone sermon series, and we've got some very compelling stories and characters, I think, that we have from our scriptures this morning to help us connect and learn from together. However, today is also the first Sunday in Lent, and that started in the middle of this past week on Ash Wednesday. Lent is a time that we get to focus on our connection with God, and we can seek to set aside and transform those things that might get in the way of our connection. This all builds up to Easter, happening in about 6 weeks. We'll be preparing ourselves for mourning Jesus' death and the brokenness in the world that in part led to that and that can happen in our own lives. But we also prepare even more for the celebration and the ability to participate in the healing and reconciliation and new birth of salvation life that happens at Easter. And so it's very appropriate that as we enter the season of Lent today, as we have a journey towards Easter, that we're reading a passage with a very important verse in it. And that was, there was a point in Jesus' ministry that he decided to turn resolutely towards Jerusalem, and that he would then make a journey to the cross, but then also to the empty tomb. Hi, how's it going? Do you guys have any thoughts about what it means to turn resolutely towards something for a journey? Determined, I like that. Anything else?
Go until I get there.
Going until, just making sure that you don't get completely rerouted on the way. Yeah?
Strong-willed.
Strong-willed, I like that. We've got some good examples so far. And here's the thing about Jesus resolutely turning towards Jerusalem and all that that ultimately means to him. This happens only about halfway through the Gospel of Luke. This is not at the end when he's like, we're almost done, it's time to get to Jerusalem. And so there's going to be a lot of ministry that Jesus is still doing. Hey, good to see you. Wendy, sitting in the back. I like it. But this was the wrong week, because I ended up coming back here anyway. Do you guys have any thoughts about what it means to travel resolutely, turn towards somewhere resolutely? Can you say anything, Jen? It's okay, I know I'm putting you on the spot. But
Sternly.
Some real resolve, some real like oomph up to it. Yeah, Joyce.
Going with conviction.
Going with conviction. I like it. So also, if we were to have mapped out all of the places that Jesus went after this time in the Gospel of Luke, he does not end up just going straight to Jerusalem. He's not very efficient. It looks like a wild goose chase, just all over the place on the map if we looked at all of those places that he would have gone. Anybody else with ideas about what it looks like to travel resolutely towards a destination? Yeah, Lisa.
With purpose.
With purpose. Yeah, I like these too. Anyone else? All right, we've been getting some really good ideas. Thank you. So Jesus was really looking a lot more like an indecisive gap year student than he was like that dad who's going on a road trip and wants to beat the Google Maps time by as much time as he can. Right? And he was looking a lot more like me, just strolling around the sanctuary just now. Even though Luke found it very important to point out, Jesus is making this journey with a goal of Jerusalem clearly in mind. And Luke is very careful to point out that he's turning himself resolutely in that direction, even though his direction goes all over the place. So what does it mean that that was true about Jesus? Why, if Jesus was going all over the place and taking his sweet time on these back roads routes, why is it that Luke wants to make sure to tell us that this is what was happening? It's valuable for us during this season and in our faith lives in general to also think about what it means for us to resolutely travel and follow God. And I think that we can learn about that today in some really important ways, but also by looking at a story of a more everyday person. If you were to ask me about two stereotypes of people that can be very resolute, including some of the characteristics that all of you just mentioned, I'd have two that jumped instantly to mind. On the one hand, I would picture like a very strict, maybe kind of patriarchal type of person, like a cold dad who's giving out a punishment and is not going to listen to any pleas or, you know, please be nice, please be merciful, I'm sorry, it's okay, sticking to it. But ironically, on the other hand, the picture that jumps to mind for me of someone who can be very resolute, like put their foot down, is a stereotypically spoiled daughter. Think like daddy's little princess who's throwing a tantrum because, daddy, I want a pony, and I'm going to melt down until you get it for me. I'm not giving up until I get my way. And I don't think either of those are necessarily examples that we want to emulate, but maybe that picture can give us a good transition to an idea of resoluteness for our story today, and especially of everyday people that we read about in the book of Exodus. There are women that I think we can learn a lot from in that story, and that we can get a lot of encouragement from about what resoluteness looks like in all of its depth. And that includes a kind of princess, right, Pharaoh's daughter, who actually I don't think seemed to be very spoiled, but she definitely seemed very resolute, we will find. She and the women in Moses' family that we meet show us what it looks like to be resolute in God's values and in God's way as everyday people, and that we can learn from that in our own lives and circumstances. We see this especially if we contrast the values that they were willing to operate from compared to the values that Jesus' disciples were showing around the time that Jesus was turning resolutely. And that, in fact, I would say Jesus in part was having to be resolute because the people around him had these other expectations and values that they were operating in that he had to sort of stand against and give instruction about for how he was going to live God's way himself. So we can look at some of that contrast, and we'll have some slides that we can go to, Jay and Corey, if we want to do that. So we'll bring up the first one. On the one hand, we can see that the disciples were very self-aggrandizing. They start off transitioning into when Jesus was thinking about it's time to turn, having this fight over who is the greatest. And they were close to Jesus. We could probably imagine that they said, you know what? We're in with this guy. He picked us. He seems to like us. We're getting to participate with him. He's doing all of these absolutely amazing things. But what they decide to do with that, the encounter that they have, the learning that they're starting to do, is they focus most on what that means for their own benefit, their own position, their own privilege and power. They don't think about how can we use this to share with other people and change the lives of those around us. They don't think about how can I continue to learn from someone who's doing this, who has this amazing connection with God? How can I keep growing and learning as a person? And ultimately, when Jesus responds to this, he doesn't just correct them and say, hey guys, you got to calm down, you're getting a little big for your britches. He actually redefines what greatness is. It's those who come as learners, who come most humbly, who are seen as potentially the least or the outcast that can be the greatest. This is different than what we see the women doing in the passage around Moses, where they had a sort of self and context awareness that allowed them to stay within God's path. Pharaoh's daughter did have some position, right? She's the daughter of Pharaoh, but she's also a woman. Probably also Pharaoh had many wives, many children by those wives. So it wasn't necessarily that she would get a ton of attention or a ton of position from that, but she was willing in what she had to have some focus on the experience and position and circumstance of other people, and to use what position she had in a way that could be helpful to those people. Similarly, Moses' mom and his sister had very little, but they were willing to put that even at risk for the sake of love and for the sake of someone who would have been put to death had they not been willing to risk their own circumstance. And of course, we know that this resulted in welcoming a little child in a way that the disciples were not able to, that Jesus needed to teach them, and that ultimately made a significant difference for the Israelite people and for the world, that child was welcomed. If we continue thinking about this, we can go to the next slide. The disciples were full of arbitrary exclusion at the same time. They've already been taught a lesson from Jesus about not focusing on a certain definition of greatness and being competing with each other about it. And then they instantly turn their next focus to another thing of saying, well, we're still greater than somebody, and somebody is not that great. Because here's a person who is doing something that God cares about, doing something that is part of God's transformation of the world as well, and casting out demons. But they don't control that person. They don't have close connection to that person. They don't maybe understand that person. Maybe that person has some differences in where they come from, or what they look like, or the strategies that they use for the demon casting, or whatever it might be. And their impulse about that is to say, we have to keep all of the goodness and greatness and the things that feel connected to God only for ourselves. It starts to trickle out of our control, out of our comfort zone, out of it being about us. That's a problem. So we have to cast this person out. We have to disparage them, even if there are good things and healing and life-bringing that is happening through this person. And so Jesus again challenges them. Why is it that you decide that your experience with God is something that you need to try to control and hold on to and keep only to yourself and not see it spill out into more of the world around you, more people that maybe you don't know exactly what their circumstance is like, maybe the way that they're connecting with God is something that you don't instantly relate to, but why is it that you want to tamp down an encounter with God that they're having? Why is it that you want to get rid of benefit and salvation life that is coming to people through God, but just not through you? On the other hand, the women around Moses gave very clear intentional inclusion. It would have been very easy and in fact natural for Pharaoh's daughter to just ignore a baby in a basket going down the river. She could have stayed comfortable. She may have even been able to, because the Pharaoh had given an order that all Hebrew boys that had been born needed to be killed. And that was in part essentially national security for Egypt. They didn't want to have Israel continue to grow and grow. She could have gotten her dad's favor by saying, "Dad, I found one of those horrible Hebrew babies. Let's get it." He would have said, he might have said, "Daughter, that's so wonderful. You're following my command. Thank you." But instead, she was willing to notice something that could have passed by otherwise. She was willing to put extra responsibility in her life that she could have said, "Let's just keep it cushy and easy." She was willing to risk conflict and disfavor with the most influential person in her life, and even having an impact on her own kids that either she already had or that she could eventually have. Because now here's one more person to compete for attention, favor, resources, whatever it might be, and that is not her own. And also, not only does she just bring the baby in, not only does she notice that, but she notices the family. She notices the daughter on the riverside. She lets the daughter and the sister of Moses say, "Hey, can you bring in more of my family to come and help the baby?" And she says, "Yes, come, let's bring you in. I'll pay you for what you're going to do." She's willing to see the context around Moses and not just do the least thing, but find more opportunities to live out God's way, to be resolute, and not stopping at the lowest common denominator. And then lastly, we'll see another comparison. The disciples were focused on this hypocritical power competition. As Jesus went on his way, right, they find out that a Samaritan village is rejecting him, the other disciples do. And by the way, it's probably because the Samaritans and the Jewish people already had a competition between each other. The Jewish people believed that God was most present in their temple in Jerusalem, and that that's the proper way to worship and connect with God. The Samaritans are people who had a background in the Israelite tribes of the north and then had been kind of carried off in exile and came back and reestablished connection with God by worshiping God on a mountain that was special to them. And so the Samaritan people and the Jewish people sort of went back and forth about which is the right way. Where is God most present? How are we supposed to connect to God the most? And we know that the Samaritans were vilified, right? You've probably heard like the Good Samaritan is a surprising parable because Samaritans were considered awful. And so the Samaritan village has probably been seeing Jesus. He's been traveling around Samaria at this point. He's including people that were normally not included. He's showing that God is present amongst them in a special way. He's doing amazing things. And then they may have heard. So he's been showing all these ways that God includes us too. He's not just sort of only favoring the Jews. That's amazing. We think that's beautiful. But now he's turning to Jerusalem. He's clearly choosing them over us. He's decided that they're more important after all. Maybe we don't want to deal with this guy after all. And we can see that as wrongheaded, and I think that it is, but that also that's kind of heartbreaking. We can understand if you thought this meant that God was with us in a way that nobody else was willing to acknowledge, and then you had your hopes somehow tarnished, that would be very difficult, and you wouldn't necessarily want to spend time. But the disciples don't have that empathy. They don't have that sense of what maybe is going on. Instead, they get sucked into the false focus and the pre-existing competition between the temple and the mountain, between the Jerusalem and between the Samaritans. And they even make it escalate. They don't just say, let's not pay attention to them. Let's not spend our time on them anymore. They say, they're so bad, we have to wipe them out. Not just we have to ignore them or we have to say that they're wrong. We have to call down suffering fire from heaven on them. And this shows a fundamental misunderstanding of Jesus, by the way. Because this is an understanding of Jesus as the Messiah who just comes to kill and wipe out all of your enemies, as a military leader that's going to eliminate rather than love and serve and sacrifice for enemies. And so Jesus basically has to say, just because you're with me does not mean that you get to act like you control God and other people. And as much as they are missing the point about why I need to turn to Jerusalem, you are missing the point about who I am and what I'm going to be doing in Jerusalem. So you have more in common than you may realize. On the other hand, the women around Moses were willing to look to do very principled, you might say resolute, subversion or undermining of oppression. All of the women were willing to look for ways to challenge the injustice that was happening, trying to kill all of the Israelite male babies. And even though that came at great risk to them and great cost to themselves, they were willing to hope that any small thing that they could do could bring more life to more people. Pharaoh's daughter knew that she was going to be known, that she was aiding and abetting lawbreakers directly. It's not just, oh, here's a baby. Who knows who it is? I'll take care of it and be nice. She assumed it was a Hebrew baby. She would have been smart enough that, oh, there's this girl that just happens. I've never seen her before. She just happens to pop up right when the baby's around. That's probably just some random Hebrew girl. I'll just be nice to her, right? I think all the people in this story are smart enough to know what is going on and what they're doing. And Moses' sister probably realized that she was exposing herself. That the Pharaoh's daughter would guess that, oh, you're all part of this plot or whatever, huh? But she was willing to try and help on the hope that there might be something good that would come from it and not that she would get tied into destruction and pain. And this would ultimately end up being a direct challenge to the Pharaoh, showing him, hey, Dad, I know you're trying to kill all of these babies. I'm taking one in. I'm caring for it. I think there's a better way. I think that we can be more just. I think we can be more beneficial to everyone instead of just trying to get more for ourselves. It would have been very hard for the Pharaoh to ignore that his daughter is saying, I have a Hebrew baby now, and I'm going to treat it very differently than my dad does. And I think even more amazingly, we see in the next passage, Moses has grown up. He has this encounter where he sees a Hebrew slave being beaten, and so he attacks and even kills the slave master that was going after the Hebrew. It says that he saw a slave master beating one of his own people, which means, again, that even though it could have been risky, even though it was a direct confrontation to the power at the time, he was raised with a knowledge of exactly who he was. His mom said, I love you, I care for you, but you're a Hebrew. She didn't just say, you're an Egyptian, we're going to pretend that that's not there because everyone thinks that's dirty and horrible. She's willing to bring out power and opportunity for those people that were otherwise rejected instead of hiding it. Did she know that she might even be setting up the entire liberation of those people? Like we can see with the disciples, we know it can be so easy to worry about whatever it is that we have personally. And then we can think, all right, so I just have to make sure I keep it. I use it only for my own benefit. I use it for my own control and comfort. Maybe I use it to make my own sense of being holier than someone else who is not as good be that much more solid. But Jesus' resolute turn to Jerusalem, to the cross, and to Easter is a rejection of that way of being and an invitation into something better. Something like what we see with the Pharaoh's daughter and the women of Moses' family, where people use whatever it is that they have, big or small, to serve and to love and to empower others, even if it stands up to the powers that put us at risk. And that is where God will most show up. That is where we can use even the small seeds of being resolute to follow God's way and change the world. So I know it was a little bit weird and annoying to have me all over the place at the start of the service, but hopefully it kind of made sense as I was going along, right? I was wanting to reinforce the idea that Jesus was doing something surprising in his kind of rabbit trail run around. And I wanted to also communicate the sense that we are all in something together. And so we can see, if we focus on that, that Jesus was somehow both resolute in his focus on Jerusalem, but also ended up going on this very rabbit trail way in getting there. And that I think the reason why he did that gives us this deeper understanding of what it looks like to travel resolutely. Even more than that, like, journey and destination dynamic that I talked about in the children's message, right? Sometimes we say to be resolute means to go exactly to your destination. Sometimes we might say resolute is to focus as much on what's going on around you as you do. I think Jesus has something even deeper that we can think about. There's this interesting turn of phrase that is used as he is turning. It says, as the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus turned resolutely towards Jerusalem. Now, we might normally expect that what that would say instead is, as the time came for Jesus to be sacrificed on the cross. Or the disciples at the time might have said, as the time came for Jesus to conquer and kick out all of God's enemies. Maybe there's other things that we would have expected, but probably not ascended to heaven. Jesus knew that he's here on earth to bring God's kingdom and its salvation on earth as it is in heaven. All of what he did was about making that connection between heaven and earth. Jerusalem was a place where he needed to confront people who thought that they were in control of heaven from earth. And no matter what that cost Jesus, he needed to go there to stand up to it and show that God had a different way. But that same problem wasn't just happening in Jerusalem. It was happening all over in people's experience in big and small ways, all over where he was. And so he knew that it was vital to take that same stand in other places too, and to show it in a variety of ways, whether it be healings, whether it be including people at table fellowship that wouldn't be included, other types of miracles, other teachings, and ultimately confronting powers that could lead to his death. So Jesus showed us that what is most important is not choosing between a journey or a destination, but to be travelers who are full of awareness and purpose. Pharaoh's daughter and Moses' family resolutely acted in that way of awareness and purpose in their time and circumstance as well. They were willing to commit themselves to use whatever it was that they had, whether it felt like a lot or a little, to live God's values and encourage salvation and thriving for themselves and even more for others around them, wherever that they could notice things and be able to connect with other people and in whatever circumstances they found themselves and others in. This is something that we can learn from as well and do in our own circumstances, whatever it is that they are. As we enter this Lenten season, it's a great chance to ask God, show me, show us something that we can be resolute about and grow an awareness about and purpose for. I believe God can show any of us people that we may need to notice that we can share salvation life with, people that God can help us see that we can support where they might be experiencing rejection and mistreatment otherwise. We can offer whatever it is that we have, and whoever it is that we are, in this resolute spirit. And we can do that even starting today in our time of offering. And I hope that we find ways to support each other in doing this in all sorts of tasks and times together in coming weeks.